In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Sundress, and today's show is a long time coming, but we finally got him. Stuart Immonen joins us today for a lengthy conversation, not only about the upcoming event Fear itself, which he's doing with Matt Fraction, but also a look back at Avengers work with Brian Michael Bendis, and various other points of his career. A lot of talk about his work on Superman, both as a writer and an artist, talking about the Legion of Superheroes run that he had early in his career, some great stuff that he did at Guerrilla Comics with Kurt Busiek, things like Shock Rockets and Superstar. We'll also talk about collaborations with his wife, Catherine, not only on Moving Pictures, their great graphic novel that came out last year from Top Shelf, but a future project that is in the works. Stuart will give us an update on that. It's funny, if you step back and look at Stuart's work, especially his work of the last 20 years, you'd be shocked at the different art styles that he brings to each project. We talk about that in detail on this edition of Word Balloon. It's all brought to you today by InStock Trades and InStockTrades.com. There's a wide selection of trade paperbacks, hardbacks, absolute editions, omnibus editions, essentials, all at reduced prices from 38% off the standard retail price to over 52% off the standard retail price. And don't forget, at InStockTrades.com, any orders of $50 or more, you get free shipping. You'll be pleasantly surprised at the selection of Stuart Immonen product that you can find at InStockTrades.com. Some of the books we talk about today, his graphic novel Superman, End of the Century, written and drawn by Stuart, in fact, painted by Stuart Immonen. A beautiful book. The standard retail price on it is $17.95. At InStockTrades.com, it's just $11.13. Catherine and Stuart's great graphic novel from last year, Moving Pictures. The standard retail price is $14.95. At InStockTrades.com, it's just $10.47. Stuart is part of the Best of the Fantastic Four Volume 1 hardcover. The standard retail price for that is $29.99. At InStockTrades.com, it's just $14.99. Or the hardcover edition of Shock Rockets from IDW. That, of course, from Kurt Busiek and Stuart Immonen. The standard retail price is $24.99. At InStockTrades.com, it's just $17.49. Don't forget about their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at DCBService.com for all your monthly pre-order needs. To find out all the great values waiting for you, go to their website. Make sure you look up Stuart at InStockTrades.com. Word Balloon is also brought to you by C2E2, the Chicago Comics and Entertainment Expo. The second edition is coming this March. It's March 18th through the 20th here at McCormick Place in downtown Chicago. Make sure you come out and say hi, because I'll be there live at Podcast Alley. We're going to plan on some special broadcasts that we'll be doing at the convention. I also get to be part of the podcast panel on Friday night at 6:30. But it's a great weekend of good entertainment at C2E2. Let me tell you about some of the stars that are going to be there. Brian Bendis, Garth Ennis, Paul Cornell, Tony Daniel, Art Balthazar, Matt Fraction, Doug Monkey, Adam Hughes, Tony Moore, Scott Snyder, Bill Willingham, Joe Quesada, Andrew Peepoy, Angel Medina, Bill Reinhold, C.B. Cebulski, Joe Quesada, Fred Van Lente, Hilary Barta, Greg Tocchini, J. Scott Campbell, Katie Cook. It's a great lineup, and every week they're adding more names. In fact, this week they've added some names to the entertainment guests. Some pretty neat people are coming. People like Sam Trammell from True Blood, John Bernthal from The Walking Dead, Tam O'Pennicott from Dollhouse and Battlestar Galactica, and lots more. Don't forget, tickets are available at C2E2.com. If you buy them before March 14th, you'll get the whole weekend for just $50. It's C2E2 at McCormick Place in downtown Chicago. For more information, you'll find out more at C2E2.com. First, I want to say congratulations on the Schuster nomination.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very much appreciated. Well, not to beat my own drum, but I did win last year, and that was a surprise too.
Excellent. Now, did you win for?
It's an honor to be nominated again.
Was it the same category, best artist, or was it for you and Catherine?
Yeah. No, Moving Pictures, I don't think, came up with the nominations, but that's cool. But she was nominated in the writer category, and I was nominated for artist.
I saw that. Yes, congratulations to both of you. And as usual, tough competition. You know, you got Francis, you got Cameron Stewart, you got Darwin.
Oh, I know. Don't remind me.
Among others.
You think, we're a small country in population, but but there's a lot of talent here.
I'm aware. And I'm very bummed because, once again, they've scheduled a Wizard show opposite Chicago's C2E2. And I wasn't sure if you guys would necessarily come anyway, but it doesn't make it any easier when you have a show in your backyard in Toronto.
Yes, I know. We weren't invited to the Chicago show, and frankly, it's usually a matter of finances and time. You know, there are only so many weekends you can set aside for doing this kind of thing, and obviously, it is, as you say, it's much easier to do it when it's close by. But you know, so far we don't have very many shows lined up in the coming con season, which is like all the time now. 12
yeah, really.
A year is con season,
pretty much.
Yeah, we'd love to do that. We heard great things about last year's show.
Well, and you know, it'd be great to see you guys. And I you know, was thrilled to see you last summer in San Diego. And also, yes. I should say this at the front, for people who haven't heard it, go back and listen to the panel that we did, because if you don't hear me talk about certain things with Stuart, it's likely that we did talk about them 6 months ago with he and Catherine. And, you know, and it was great then. You got the Inkpot Award. So
that's right. That, again, what a surprise. You know, I don't necessarily want to be reminded that I've actually been doing this job for more than 20 years. But
yeah, those lifetime achievement awards. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, they want to get it in before your wrist falls off.
Yeah, doddering. Exactly. No, this is good. No, man. It's ongoing, and I think that's great.
You're still able to lift it.
There you go. Yeah, because it is big. How did you guys get it through customs?
And heavy. Well, it wasn't like the Ignatz Award, you know, the brick. But
that's right.
But you see, luckily there were two of us, so we were able to distribute. We didn't have to saw it in half or anything.
Very nice.
We were able to, you know, put souvenirs in one and put the Inkpot in the other.
Okay. Well, let's talk about, you know, first I want to talk about you leaving New Avengers, because it was a great run, and I loved I loved the story that it ended on. And, wow, we saw the rise and fall of Dr. Voodoo as Sorcerer Supreme in your hands.
Yeah, well, you know, I was present, but really, Brian was running the show, and that was his vision. I was sort of kept in the dark for as much as anybody else for the great majority of the storytelling. But
really,
but that was things are discussed among writer and editor primarily, and Brian's very generous and often offers to, you know, bring me more into the storytelling process. But you know, I've got so much on my plate already, and I know he can handle it, so he doesn't need my interference. You know, I didn't know what the final conclusion would be, so it's not like, you know, I'm turning the pages as I'm doing it, and then, you know, I've got to draw this scene, and I had no idea. But I really didn't know until that sixth issue.
Wow. So how does that work then, Stuart? Maybe even with Brian in particular, do you get an overview of the arc in general? What happens at the beginning of a story arc? How much information are you given?
Well, that kind of thing has happened in the past, and I think more. I was used to that when I was working at DC, especially on the Superman books.
Yes,
and that at one time I was writing one of them as well as drawing.
Absolutely.
So this is all, of course, pre-internet. So we would all be physically sent everything that everybody was working on. So we would everybody on the team, which was some 20 people, would receive a couriered package with all the pencils that everybody had done that week, and all the script and all the dialogue and lettering and everything.
Wow.
It was a monster. It was like a phone book delivered to your door once a week.
So was it photocopies of everybody else's script and
yeah,
pencils and stuff?
Photocopies. And,
interesting.
You know, I'm still using the backs of those photocopies to, you know, for scrap paper in my printer right now.
Oh, wow, man.
There was that much. It was like that was 15 years ago.
Man, that could be a little
That gives you an idea.
That could be a little side section of your table, man. You could sell some cool stuff right there.
I know.
Come on, man.
If ever I've got anything that's you know, not sitting plush on the floor, then I can just prop it up with old photocopies from the Superman days.
Wow.
So I don't know. Maybe that whole process got beaten out of me at that point because it was really a lot to keep track of.
Was it almost overwhelming in terms of information then? Was it more than what you really needed to accomplish, you know?
No, not necessarily more. And in fact, you know, nowadays I want to have, you know, access to, you know, a certain character's current costume or what have you.
Sure.
And if, you know, usually I go to Google, and if I can't find what I'm looking for there, then I'll get in touch with the editor, and they've got some poor intern whose job is, you know, solely to come up with scans of stuff for people like me. For the most part, it's not these days. It's not that much required, at least not on my in my experience, and not even on a book with a big cast like New Avengers.
Okay. So again, that was interesting because we're going to come back to Superman because that isn't something that we talked much about at that panel in San Diego. But
true.
But for Avengers and stuff, you know the basics of the story. I mean, how much are you given when you know the arc is about to begin from Brian? Let's start with Brian.
Right. Like I said, you know, in the old days. There was a lot, and maybe just because I was doing some of the writing at that point, then I was more aware of that kind of process where you give an overview and you give a book by book breakdown, and then you know you break it into scenes, and then you break it into pages, and so on, and that really isn't the case with my working situation right now, and it isn't the case with Brian. Even when we were working on Ultimate Spider-Man, it didn't come up. You know, I would know that the arc would be five or six issues, or I would assume as much, since most of them were. But
sure,
I really wouldn't have any foreknowledge as far as you know, where the crest of the story would be, and all the characters that would show up. I really just get it script by script, and that's sort of been the normal way of things, at least in my experience, since I've been at Marvel.
Huh. Now, on a book like Avengers, where there are so many characters, revolving characters, cameos from, you know, people like Damian Hellstrom and Doctor Strange and various non-regular Avengers.
Just show up.
Okay. And, you know, like, is that okay? Is that a scramble? Like, holy shit, all right, what does he look like now? You know, I mean.
No. Deadlines being what they are, I'm pretty reliable.
Yes, indeed. No, truly.
I don't seem to have too much trouble. Oh, thanks. Getting a book out on a monthly basis. But even so, there's still, it doesn't take more than 24, maybe 48 hours to get the kind of reference I need. And it's not like, you know, it must be more difficult for the writer to get a real sense of, you know, personality and, you know, really get into the characters and get, you know, some understanding of who they are in order to be able to write them. But I just kind of have to know, you know, what they look like.
Sure.
And it's pretty straightforward. The powers and all that. But it's fairly uncomplicated.
Okay. And was it fun? Was it fun doing the Avengers? I know you're used to doing big team books. You've done, I mean, going back to the Legion even. So, I mean, you know, yeah, for you handling a bunch of characters, that's nothing new. But was it, you know, was it fun? Was it okay?
Well, Yeah, it was fun. It was definitely a shift from Spider-Man. And,
right.
And Brian warned me ahead of time. He said, you know, there are a lot of people in the book. And I thought, well, you know, you've got Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy and and Flash and everybody else on Spider-Man. And I thought, well, how many more characters could there be? But it is different because the characters are more at the forefront. And, mm-hmm. you know, somebody's favorite character might be the Thing or Iron Fist or whoever, and you know, even if they're just in the background, you know, the way Ryan writes, he gives everybody a little bit of dialogue, so you've really got to pay attention and do your best on all the characters, and nobody is really in the background, you know, as much as the secondary or tertiary characters are in a book like Ultimate Spider-Man.
Sure, everybody gets their big moment, and not only from a story standpoint, but clearly, you know, you're carrying half the load, and I mean, really, in a lot of cases, a big money shot, for a lack of a better word. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's in your hands. And again, I think too, you know, from Iron Fist's costume changing when he mm-hmm. when he went to the Magic Dimension, even the appearances of the villains and stuff. I mean, you know, those are big moments and stuff like that. So, you know, there's always something happening in an adventure book. Yeah, as opposed to
reminding me of all these challenges that I've already thought I had put behind me.
Well, and I imagine that we're getting to Fear itself, and I'm sure that will have its own set of challenges as well. But yeah, as opposed to you know, Principal Sutra's talking to Aunt May in Ultimate Spider-Man, you know,
it's more of the same. Actually, if not even more so. You know, Matt's a fabulous scripter, and it's really great to work with him finally. The scale of things, the scope of the story is such that, you know, I've got all the characters basically, without giving anything away, that I had on New Avengers, plus maybe that many again to deal with. So, again, you know, it doesn't matter how small these characters are. I'm looking at a double page spread right now in the office, and I'm drawing hundreds, maybe thousands of of tiny characters, and really, I've got to make them all count because it's important.
Absolutely. How did this assignment come up for Fear itself? You know, who called you, and how was the team put together?
Well, it actually happened for me at San Diego last year, and I guess Catherine and I had been doing a signing with Brian at the Marvel booth, and he pulled me aside, you know, out of earshot, and he said, Matt Fraction really wants to talk to you. He's got this, you know, this news, and he's got this thing that he wants to discuss, and he was very serious about it, and I said, well, what is it? And he said, oh, well, I can't tell you. And then I think a day or two went by, and we finally met up with Matt, and it was at a restaurant or a bar somewhere in the Gaslamp district, and then you know, all just chatting away, and it was normal. And I say, so what is this thing? And he said, well, I can't really talk about it here. And he pulled me outside, and we're in this dark alley, and he says, well, I've got this really great idea, and I really want to talk to you about it, but you know, I was talking to the editor, and we can't discuss it. So I couldn't find out about it then either. And it wasn't until I got home, and I think maybe 4 or 5 days went by, when Tom Brevoort, who's my editor on New Avengers, of mm-hmm. course, and editor on Fear itself, called me up and says, "Well, I've got this thing that I want to talk to you about." And I said, "Is this the thing that I was almost told about already twice?" He says, "I'm not sure," but he did lay it out. And I said, "Well, you know, I've got tremendous anticipation because, you know, everybody's talking about this thing like it's, you know, this amazing secret that but they can't even let me in on." And Tom says, "Well, maybe it's not such a big deal, and let me lay it all out for you." So he described the story in very broad terms, over, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, and you know, outlaid not only, you know, the some of the basic mechanics of the story, but also the kind of promotional and marketing push that Marvel was committed to putting behind it, and, you know, also said that we'd be able to have Wade Longrobatcher and Laura Martin on board as well.
Wow.
So, you know, yeah, superstar team. And then said, well, I said, you know, that sounds like a pretty big deal to me. So, of course, I said yes, but I don't know why he was trying to soft-pedal the whole thing. Maybe he was just having me on. But yeah, I to be honest, John, I have no idea why I was selected for this job.
Well, now, you know, I understand.
Oh, well.
Hey, Stuart, you're a fan. You know, honestly, you're a fan favorite. It doesn't surprise me that it's your turn to do an event here. You've done big events before. You did Final Night back in the day at DC.
That's right.
So, I mean, you know, you're no stranger to big events. Next Wave was kind of its own happening as it was going on. And you've had – no, you be –
I think that's an excellent sort of Roger Corman description of that particular book.
But no, you know, I mean, really, the thing gained momentum, and it kind of became this thing that I don't think anybody expected. But as you say, too, and I think this is something that a lot of fans will be excited about, is you're a top quality artist, but also a top quality artist that manages to make deadlines. So I think, you know, I think those two things.
I'm not sure why that's such a. I'm not sure why that in particular is monumental, but it seems to be uncommon anyway.
Yeah, well, now you mentioned all the promotional art that was involved, and we've seen some, you know, evidence of that in ads and different images that have popped up on the internet. How much of that, you know, like how early did you start working on this?
Well, maybe not as early as I could have, and Matt let me in on some of the details surrounding the involvement of the whole editorial staff and him. I mean, the way he made it sound, it was, you know, him on one side of a long meeting table and then everybody else at Marvel on the other side. So I, you know, again, you mentioned Final Night, and so I'm aware of the amount of coordination that needs to take place in order to make this kind of thing happen. And, you know, in one sense, it is just the seven issues that we're doing. And you can read that and be satisfied. But if you want more, then there's going to be more and books that, you know, will be written to stand alone along with our the main title will be available. And then there will be, obviously, the every character that's in Fear Itself is, you know, a well-known Marvel character, and they're in their own books, and they're doing something that has to do with it. So there's every editor that handles one of these characters has a say, and they you know, they don't want control to slip entirely out of their hands.
Sure.
When they're dealing with these characters on a monthly basis. So there was a lot of steps that had to be taken between when I found out about it around July and then when we actually got rolling, which I guess was around late October. So then, you know, as you mentioned, there are promotional art, teaser art, and, you know, teaser covers that were done by me and other people, and that stuff is still happening. There was a thing about one of the prologue stories that I think was just released today, which doesn't have to do with, you know, Matt and myself, but I was handled by I think Ed Brubaker, if I'm not mistaken. I could look it up, but you know, these things are going to keep rolling out until the book happens in April.
Gotcha.
But, you know, for my part, I've just got to, you know, put blinkers on and concentrate on the story in front of me, and then deal with, you know, covers and posters and teaser work and so on as it comes up. But I trust in the scheduling at Marvel to guide me through all that, and I've gotten a detailed deadline schedule for all the issues, and it's perfectly reasonable. It's no more difficult than doing a monthly book under any other circumstances, except that, you know, it involves all these characters and involves this cosmic scale story. So I think everybody is putting a little extra effort into the work that they're doing, you know, from Matt on down.
Did you have to, for the teaser art that you did, then coordinate with...
Yeah, are we talking about the Odin and Thor piece?
You tell me, because I...
The group shot? Okay. Oh, you don't know?
Well, there's... No, that's the thing. No, I've seen the Odin shot, and I've seen the group shot, yeah. And I was wondering how many of those did you end up doing?
Well, there...
And they might still be coming out, so I don't want to, you know. Yeah, and I can imagine that sometimes it's hard to remember what's already been released and what hasn't. So the Spider-Man piece, maybe, or the Hulk piece that we've seen?
No, those were handled by other people.
Okay.
And, I'm trusting in the coordination magic that happens behind the scenes in the bullpen that we'll make all this stuff happen. They don't... I think, you know, I've been working with Marvel since 2004 or 2005?
That would have been my guess, okay.
On contract, yeah. And you know, therefore established a fairly regular track record, and I think I'm...
Sure.
It's known what I can handle and what I can't handle. So, you know, when I started on Ultimate Spider-Man... they were doing, 18 issues a year?
Yeah.
And, it was amazing, but, you know, I can't do that. And I said up front, you know, if this is what you're expecting, it's not going to happen. And, you know, there was some tisking and some disappointment, I think, but they said, well, okay, I guess.
Jesus.
You know, I can do what I can do.
Yeah, but how many Bagleys are there out there? I mean, I can only think of like possibly Romita, maybe Junior, if he, you know.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, you know, Mike Norton is a guy that I think if he were asked can crank out more than 12 issues a month or a year rather.
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly, I can only count him on one, maybe two hands. That's about it.
Yes. Well, the thing with me is that I might be able to do it, but it just wouldn't be the quality that
right.
you get with,
absolutely.
With Mark or with JR. Yeah, so
crazy.
They
man.
Can do it. I don't know how they do it, but there you go.
Unbelievable. Well, that's okay, man. And again, we want it good. I mean, that's the thing, and that's why at the end of the day, when it's collected, I don't blame the Hitches and the Eptings and the, Van Sciver's that have, you know, troubles with, you know, maintaining a monthly schedule. If the end result is great stuff, that's what matters, and it's going to look good on the bookshelf. But I mean, you know, everyone does kind of get bummed when, you know, there's a 7-issue series and it takes, you know, 12 months for the 7-issue series to come out. But I don't,
sure.
But that's okay. Well,
not only the fans, of course.
Can't imagine on your guys'
end. Always be aware of that. But, yeah, the company wouldn't, you know, they've got an annual budget that they've got to adhere to. And you know, I bet a lot of people don't realize, but, come the 1st of December, they really start being quite firm on the deadlines, because they do have to have things in on schedule and accounted for, and it's all, you know, financial cosmic gobbledygook.
I understand.
I don't know what the crazy formulas are, but they really do pay attention to this stuff. So it's not just a creative matter, but it's a business matter too.
Sure, because things are obviously budgeted for a specific year. And if it does spill into the next year, then that's obviously a big problem. So I can appreciate that.
Yeah.
No, very good. Well, I'm glad you said that, man. That's a very good point that I don't think the average reader does take into account.
Okay. That's an exclusive.
No, good. Well, are there characters in Fear itself that you're – beyond the new characters, are there old heroes that you've never had to draw before? Old established
characters? Well, actually, I was doing an email interview earlier in the week, and it was pointed out to me, I didn't realize it, but apart from in that group shot, the teaser image, apart from Black Panther and Dracula, I've drawn everybody else.
Interesting.
Either solo or in a team book already, usually for several issues at a time.
Sure.
So, you know, Dracula and Black Panther are two, for example, that I haven't had the opportunity to draw, I don't think, ever. And of course, it's not the, you know, it's not the classic Gene Colan Dracula, but I think the new design actually has a lot going for it. So I'm kind of keen on making that happen.
Very cool.
Yes. You know, having spoken to Matt, you also know that there's a lot of stuff that centers around Asgardians with the book. So I get to draw a lot of those characters that I haven't done, since early days at Marvel for me. Again, going back, you know, 5 or 6 years when I was drawing Thor.
Who was writing Thor back then? Was that Dan Jurgens?
Yeah, that was Dan.
Okay. Very cool.
Following again on the heels of JR, and he's fantastic, and, you know, he knows how to draw power and godly presence, and, you know, or I felt a little intimidated, but I did my best.
Yeah, but honestly, Stuart, no, all people have to do is look at your bibliography, and you've done all these things. You've done big space opera. You've done, I think you've hit all these, you know, and certainly in the DC world as well. So that's why it's, you're more than up to the task, man. I mean, really, the stuff that's come out so far has been great. Everything that you've been doing on Avengers has been wonderful. And yeah, I was excited to hear that you and Matt were working together on this thing. So I think it's,
Well, certainly no more than I was. I'm very, very happy about it. The thing about me having done these other books is that I don't think a lot of people realize it, and I think that there is, you know, there's a turnover in terms of readership. So,
absolutely.
You know, and there are people that, you know, just follow characters, so they'll just read The Hulk. And that's the book that they concentrate on. So artists come and go, and then they don't know what happens to those creators. But the other aspect with my work in particular is that I'll change styles
yes.
sometimes a little bit and sometimes a lot. And I think that that prevents people from being able to follow along in a, you know, a linear way when I go from book to book. So the work that I did on Thor, for instance, doesn't really have Thor the regular series doesn't really have anything to do with how I'm handling the character this time around. I mean, if anybody has any doubts, then the work that I'm doing on Fear Itself is more or less in line with what's been coming out in New Avengers.
Mm-hmm. No, and you know, I not only have you shifted your style. And maybe to challenge yourself, tell me what is the impetus to change your style after a certain amount of time? Is that just a organic thing that happens, or are you like, I'm tired of doing it this way? Let me try something else.
There's a certain amount of creative frustration that happens that like a tickle in the back of my brain that makes me want to, you know, try out something, but it can't just happen on the spur of the moment. You know, it's got to match the project. So, you know, if I'm committed to drawing one way, and I'll make that decision based on strictly on story. So if the content, you know, demands a certain look, I'll try and achieve that look as best I can. But I won't switch gears in the middle of that series.
Sure.
You know, I'll wait until the next thing comes along when, you know, maybe it's more cartoon action like Next Wave. You know, it's over the top, it's parody, satire, and then, you know, I'll try to make it more serious and more superhero-y for something like New Avengers.
I saw
so yeah
you know you go ahead and then I'll t- and then I'll tell you what I saw recently. Go ahead.
No.
All right, then I'll tell you.
I'm talking too much.
Not at all. No, this is really interesting, and I'm glad we're getting into this because preparing for this, I was looking online, And there's a lot of stuff that you did back in the 90s that I didn't realize it was you. One of those things was Final Night. I came to Final Night because that was kind of in my down period of comics where I really wasn't reading. And so I missed it the first time around. I did end up reading it in trade, but I didn't realize it was you right away. But even better, there was you did something for one of the secret files for Superman. And you did those series of villains' origins. And I happen to see that I want to say Comic Alliance just reprinted those a couple months ago.
Yes, that's right. There was a link.
Yeah, and my God, they were great. It was really in this Winsor McKay style, and you did these two-page origins for, you know, all the different Superman villains. There's a great Doomsday that was on there. There's a great Luther thing, and it was wonderful to see. And I mean, it was great, man. I mean, it really was.
Yeah,
it was very Little Nemo-like.
I don't think anybody saw that. I think it maybe sold 10,000 copies, and you know, that was in the speculation days. So I would bet that half of those were pulped at some point,
or they're sitting in dollar bins right now. And I'm telling everybody,
yes,
run out there,
right,
and grab these things. Because they're great. Oh, they're beautiful, man. They really were.
Well,
they were fun, inventive things. So what was the inspiration for playing like in Winsor McKay's world for that?
Well, this was a story that I wrote as well. There was sort of like this bracketing story where Luther is telling, reading from a children's book to his daughter. It's as if he's reading from a children's book, but in fact he's telling his own origin and how he sort of ruled Metropolis before Superman showed up.
Yeah, before the big bad Superman came and screwed everything up, basically.
Yes, in the Man of Steel, the John Byrne stories.
Okay.
So there's this story that surrounds these individual origins, and it's his, you know, very brief take on what happened with these other villains, and he's sort of present. He's either in the background with all these other stories, or he has some influence on the way things turn out. You know, the idea of a children's book really appealed to me, and I was talking with Joey Cavalieri, who was the Superman editor at the time, and he was, you know, Joey's a cartoonist himself and really is interested in experimentation and pushing the medium and, you know, doing all kinds of things and not just doing it straight. So, you know, I propose, and, you know, I'm really digging back far, but I'm guessing that I, you know, propose doing this in this certain way and you know, showing the normal style on this bracketing story and then doing something a little different there. And he was all over it. So, you know, really it just takes a little faith on the part of the editorial team to see that, you know, it can be something more. It's visual, you know, you want to be able to explore things in a different way, you know, and in some cases they would have a different artist do one sequence and then another artist do the other sequence, but I wanted to handle it all. so I was given free rein. I was given enough rope, as they say. And I think I pulled it off, but it was just in this sort of, you know, one-shot book that came out alongside the regular series, and I don't think a lot of people saw it at the time, so it's actually, you know, kind of amazing that it can surface again so many years later, but you know, I'm pleased.
Well, absolutely,
it's
man.
It's the same kind of thing. Sorry.
No, go ahead. It's the same kind of thing in terms of?
It's the same kind of thing as you know, being approached with a script by somebody else and having the, you know, the themes and the mood and the context of the story dictate the look of it, right? And if I'm capable or if I feel capable, then I'll try and do my best to make that vision, that writer's vision, whether it's mine or somebody else's come alive in the way that, you know, the story seems to demand.
Very cool. Now, I, you know, I want to jump, before I continue with Superman, I want to jump back to your Legion of Superheroes stuff, because you were part of the 5 years later story arc. And it was, were you at the tail end of that and really into the transition of Zero Hour to Legionnaires?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I'll tell you, the, that 5 years later is probably my favorite run of the Legion. And I just felt the as
really, I'm not sure that you're in the majority here.
I understand, but I guess it was that really interesting kind of, well, you know, I know that the Legion always represented this kind of positive world, and that's what I think made the 5 years later arc such an interesting arc. And it was sad,
yeah,
but it was also really
sure.
It was incredibly compelling, and where all these heroes ended up. And, you know, some of them really in tragic situations. It was really amazing. And I give it up to Giffen every time I see him. I didn't realize mm-hmm. that you were one of the artists on there. So now I'll praise you as well and say that was, like I said, one of my favorite runs. I hope that DC has the foresight to collect the whole story sometime, because it was great. It was great. So
yeah.
And you were there for a long time.
I think 4 years total, and that was, you know, my breakout book at DC. I'd done, I think, just two jobs total before that. And, you know, here I am sandwiched between Jason Pearson, who's amazing, and Chris Sprouse, who's amazing.
You bet.
And here I have, you know, almost no professional experience, at least at the Marvel and DC level. So I'd done a one shot, and I'd done a short story for a Showcase book that had come out at that time. And I think that was it.
Okay.
And to be honest, and this was no secret at the time, but I didn't follow Legion. And I think there were a lot of people, I wasn't really aware of the kind of fan base that it had. But I learned.
I can imagine. Yeah.
And there were certainly people who thought that, you know, someone who doesn't, you know, live, breathe, eat, sleep Legion of Superheroes should not be on the book. So I felt this extra, you know, pressure to perform. But it's really nice to hear that you thought that stuff was good. It was definitely unconventional, and, you know, it was really in a transition phase where, Keith's work had been so strong. And again, he's, you know, another kind of artistic chameleon where, you know, it looks like one thing and you have an expectation that, you know, the next issue as drawn by Keith Giffen will look like what you've seen before.
Sure.
But he won't necessarily provide that.
Right. No, but that's...
So that was a real inspiration, knowing that, you know, someone like that can do that kind of thing, and that the, you know, the companies are there to support it within reason. That was really inspiring for me to realize that, you know, that kind of experimentation, you know, within genres is still welcome and supported.
Well, as I say, it was a great run, man, and I really did enjoy it. And yeah, as much as I'm sure a lot of people were relieved to get the bright, sunny Legion that they got post Zero Hour, I was kind of like, oh, I was enjoying the tragedy.
Yeah.
I was a long time reader too. So I mean, that's the thing. It's, I don't know. You know, maybe I was ready for something different at that stage of my readership, and that's why it appealed to me as much as it did.
Yes, that could be. And I'm forgetting Olivier Coipel, who did Legionnaires after Chris.
Right.
And
the Moyes, of course.
Yes, for sure. So it was all, you know, yeah, there was a lot of great stuff happening at that time.
Oh, yeah, man. Absolutely. Well, and then, you know, back to Superman, I didn't realize that a couple of your issues, you plotted them, and then Mark Miller ended up dialoguing.
Yeah, some kid named Mark Miller that I brought along.
Well, is that, yeah, where, you know, around, was this, you know, at Mark's start when, you know, he was kind of co-writing with Grant, and how did that work out that you, you know, you plotted this story, but Mark ended up scripting it?
Well, from my perspective, it was a timing issue.
Okay.
At one point, I was, and this would have been really close to 1999 or 2000. I was writing and drawing adventures, but I had also had this idea for what I proposed as an annual, starring the Contessa, who was the wife of Lex Luthor, at least at that time. And but DC was keen on doing some original hardcovers, not six-page hardcovers, and it was thought that the idea would be suitable for one of these instead. So, and actually that and there was a Superman story that Howard Chaykin wrote that came out at around the same time, where those were the first two original Superman hardcover books that DC had ever done. So again, I'm feeling this pressure.
Was that Son of Superman? Was that his Son of Superman?
Yes, that's the one. That's the one.
Okay. And yours was End of the Century, correct?
Yes. So I was writing and drawing adventures, or perhaps action at that point, because we kind of shifted around a little bit. And then I had this 96-page hardcover, which, being called End of the Century, had to come out before 2000.
Sure.
So there was a lot of pressure to get that done, and I was writing and drawing and doing painted sequences in that book. This was when I was younger and didn't know my limitations, so I was doing way more than I really should have been permitted to do. So I got sort of a leave of absence off the scripting duties on the regular Superman series, and Mark was asked to come in at that point and help me out on that. But as far as the context of what else he was doing at that point, I'm not sure precisely, but I think it was fairly early days for him.
Okay.
And certainly it was, you know, well before, you know, Mark Miller, the Mark Miller. Yes, the capital, all caps. So the personality.
Yes.
But he made it work, and then I, you know, kept slogging along. So I, you know, one of us figured it out.
That's cool. Well, and I also I'm curious too, because I'm always interested in the writers that you've worked with before, and I know you've worked with Warren before, obviously on Next Wave and Ultimate Fantastic Four,
yep.
but Carl Kessel in the DC years. Now you guys did Adventures of Superman, but you also did Final Night.
And we did a couple of Fantastic Four stories, which were really great too. I don't know if.
You know, I remember
that. You're familiar with that.
I am. And
you don't?
No, I do. And that was that right after Mark Waid and right before? And I'm trying to think of who was right, who would be right before. But am I right? Was it in that kind of 2005-ish kind of area or 2006?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And
no, they were very good, man.
Carl had done this really touching story where Ben Grimm you know, comes out as a practicing Jew, and
yes.
So many people reacted so positively to that.
I remember that. That's right.
Yeah, it was really nice, and it was just so gratifying, and to, you know, be a part of that, and then to realize after the fact, it's one of those stories. It was like sort of a really quiet story that you know didn't seem to have a whole lot of. Impact as far as, you know, what you expect in a superhero genre book.
Sure.
But it really touched a lot of people, and I still get people coming up to me and saying, you know, that was just such a great story. And, you know, it was almost like a throwaway idea that, you know, it was meant to fill in between two larger stories. And yet these are the kinds of stories that people seem to latch on to. The the last issue of New Avengers, sort of tag issue number 7, which wraps up the big, you know, magic arc.
Yes.
But is more like, you know, a quiet Avengers in the mansion, you know, at home, just talking issue. And people really seem to really get behind that. And, you know, that I saw one reference to it being, you know, sort of in line with, you know, the X-Men playing baseball with their superpowers.
Sure.
You know, behind the compound. So...
Yeah, but it's it's those human moments.
You know, it's a bit challenging for me because I've got to draw, you know, everybody sitting around a table for 14 pages, make it look interesting.
Well,
panel after panel.
But much like moving pictures with you and Catherine, it was kind of that same challenge of quiet moments becoming compelling. And no, I think you find the right style and the right way to kind of convey that and these quiet moments. The thing stuff, I'm glad you brought that up because I remember it really not only, I think, touched regular Marvel readers, but also it managed to wake up the mainstream world. And I remember there was some big mainstream media coverage of, hey, guess
That's
what?
Right.
Guess who's Jewish? Ben Grimm. And I remember hearing Stan even comment on that on a National Public Radio show. So, you know, it's...
That's right. You don't have to kill people to get on, you know, mainstream media.
I'm reminded of when Walter Simonson cut Wonder Woman's hair. It was that kind of same reaction of, hey, look at the change that's happening in one of our iconic 20th century mythology figures. So that's – I think that's neat. But as you say, no, it's reassuring that I think the readership reacts to the quiet moments in a positive way because, you know, I mean, that is what elevates the medium beyond – the Sunday Funnies Fair that I think, you know, it became for so many decades. And now with, you know, the modern era has really kind of, you guys have all kind of come to the table and elevated the game and said, no, this can be good, serious storytelling fair. And that's the only way to prove that is quality art, quality story. So, you know, it's, that's awesome. I think that's terrific.
Oh, well, thanks. You know, I'd be awfully disappointed if I'd been, you know, working at this for this long and I thought, oh, wait a minute, you know, it's all been a waste. No, it's not like that. You know, I think everybody, you know, as much as there is a divide between the indie culture and the mainstream as we understand it in comic terms.
Sure.
Culture, everybody who's in it is in it to do the absolute best that they can. You know, maybe there are a few exceptions, but really, I think that the great majority of people are you know, they really want to perform and entertain people and, you know, do great stuff. I think Scotty Young, for instance, was saying on Twitter that if, I think it was Scotty. I'm gonna catch it if it wasn't. But somebody on Twitter was saying, you know, if they weren't making stuff for a living in this way, they'd still be making stuff because they just love it that much. So that's the way I feel about it. And you know, it. I think genre is not a mark of quality or not. I think you can tell, you know, those kinds of powerful, moving, emotional stories that people want to read it in a superhero book, or you can tell it in something like moving pictures. And I think the it's all about story, right?
You
know, we're all there to lift it up and to make it as, you know, compelling and meaningful to people as possible. And it doesn't matter what the decoration of it, you know, the way that it is presented. But here I'm rambling.
No, but I agree. And
I think I've made my point.
No, absolutely. Well, and another great story like that, you know, has a lot of bombast, but also good emotional moments. We talked a little bit about it at your panel in San Diego, but the Kurt Busiek story, Secret Identity, I think is the Superman secret identity story. And it's interesting that he's, I guess, coming back to that milieu with Jean-Paul Leon, yes. I guess. They're in the midst of doing a Batman story.
Another fantastic artist. Yeah,
absolutely.
I know. And you know that, as I understand it, has sort of been percolating again since, 2003 or so, or maybe even earlier, because I know that Kurt wanted to do something else, not necessarily with me, but I don't think he would have ruled that out, since I think we've got a pretty good working relationship. Maybe he would.
Yeah.
Maybe he thinks differently, but I don't think so. But you know, he got hooked up with one thing, and I got hooked up with another, so it never materialized in that way. But obviously, at the time, DC was behind the Secret Identity and wanted to, I think, explore it as far as involving other characters. And yeah, a lot of people, again, continue to be really moved by this story, in which, you know, not a whole lot of superheroic action takes place. I mean, it's there, and he does, you know, he saves people, and he, you know, there are huge floods and tornadoes,
sure,
and crashing trains and you know, government plots and stuff like that. And so, you know, the trappings are there, but it's really subdued. And again, you know, as far as my contribution went, when Kurt was talking about, you know, doing something that took place in a naturalistic setting, that essentially took place in the real world, you know, I didn't want to do it in a way that was, you know, conventionally a superhero approach. I really wanted to sort of try and elevate my game and do something that felt natural and felt real to people. So, you know, the whole thing has to knit together.
Did you use photographs to kind of inform your art? Because it almost did have that kind of realistic quality to it.
Yeah. Well, I do. I've always done that. And having... It just gets easier all the time. I mean, I actually used to use film cameras, and not only on Secret Identity, but on the painted work in End of the Century, particularly. I was referencing models, and in fact, Catherine is one of the models in End of the Century.
Oh, that's cool.
So if you want to pick that in. She's there.
Huh.
But yeah.
That's cool. That's really cool.
But it's in those days it was really laborious, and you know, even if you had 24-hour turnaround on getting filmed of it, it was a really challenging way to work. But I've always kept sort of a morgue or a library of references, and I still do that kind of thing. So it's mostly digital now, but it's not just the very realistic work that is influenced by photographic reference, but even the cartoony stuff. Next Wave, for example, had loads of photo reference, and you know, hopefully the skill of the artist is present enough that people don't sort of see that first.
Understood.
That, you know, it should look like, you know, that it's natural to the setting. So in the case of Next Wave, it's, you know, everything is cartooned. So, and everything is exaggerated, but it should make sense within that world.
Understood.
But even so, it should also make sense, you know, to, you know, human eyes, to see that the characters aren't grossly disproportioned, or, you know, they should have natural body language, and they should move and react and act in a way that we expect them to. So I'm always using photographic reference to make sure that I'm sort of on model.
I got you. Now, this did come up, but I'll, for the purposes, if people didn't hear us 6 months ago, we're talking about a bit about Next Wave. So, and you had a very good answer to that question, I think, at the panel back in San Diego. I imagine
okay.
things
like
haven't.
I'm going to remember.
Well, no, but essentially people were wondering, and especially after the collection came out, you know, the new deluxe version of the collection came out. You know, what are the chances that we might, if ever, see another Next Wave story?
Well, I'd say as we go forward in time, maybe not so hot, but as little as 6 months or a year ago, it actually seemed pretty positive that it was possible that there could be at least a one more story that we could tell.
Like a one-shot or an arc?
Well, they were still deciding on the format. Marvel was still deciding on the format of the collected edition, and they might have done one of the oversized hardcovers, and
right.
if that was the case, they were wondering if, you know, Warren and I might be able to come together and do something that would pad it out and, you know, make it a little more special for the people mm-hmm. that already had the individual issues or the other collections or what have you. And as I understand it, Warren initially said, no. And no. And then he was given, you know, a couple of days to think about it. And then the quote that I got was, "God help me, I've got an idea." and he had something. I don't even remember if I found out what it was, but he did have something that he could, you know, do in a pinch. And I know that he was really quite busy at the time. And, of course, I've had regular work since then, too.
Sure.
So, but I think we were both prepared to drop what we had to and make a go of it. But as it turned out, the collection just did the 12 issues, and I think there were some extras, but they decided that ultimately they didn't have room for another story of any length. At least, you know, for that. But I'm trying to concentrate
sure.
solely on Fear itself, and that looks like that's going to take up all my time until September or so.
Understood.
I'm not even sure what I'll be capable of doing at that point myself, because I might not even be physically able to lift a pencil.
Well, I was going to honestly, man, I was going to ask about that, because you really haven't had a break per se.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of the last time you had a break. So, do you need do you need that? I mean, do you think, you know, after something like this, you might need hey, give me a month or two to kind of chill out and crack my knuckles and
Well, one thing that I was concerned about between the end of my run on New Avengers and the beginning of Fear itself was sort of being out of the public eye for a number of months. And it's not like the work hasn't been there. I've been working steadily and just, you know, dropped one project and picked up another one right away. But to sort of alleviate that, an opportunity came up for Catherine and I to do a short story for the X-Men office, which I think is going to be out in just a week or two. It's in the final issue of the anthology X-Men To Serve and Protect, which I think has already had three issues, and we'll be doing a book out. We'll be doing a story in the fourth, and it's. But I think that the overarching theme for the series is the X-Men and non-X-Men Marvel characters meeting up. Being that the creators are Catherine and myself, we wanted to do a Patsy Walker story. So we're doing Hellcat and Gambit
Oh, that's great.
But yes, it was fantastic. I was really pleased with the way it turned out. But you know, part of the reason, you know, apart from getting to work with Catherine, that I wanted to do it was to have something, you know, on the shelves between, you know, November and April, where, you know, I'm not, it doesn't look to the public like, you know, I'm doing anything at all, but, you know, even if I get 8 pages out in that length of time, it still feels like I've got my toes in the water.
No, I understand.
But like you say, behind the scenes, I'm doing stuff nonstop, and if I'm not at a convention or some other kind of appearance, then really it is very, very time consuming, and as it works out, even though there's time in most of the schedules to in a monthly schedule to do 22 pages and get weekends off.
Okay.
I still feel like I kind of have to do something almost every day. Like, and that might just be a couple of hours, but I really feel like I notice a drop in quality if I let it go for a couple of days. And certainly if I'm, you know, away traveling or whatever, I really find it difficult to get back into the mindset and the, you know, sort of mind muscle connection.
Sure.
That is required to you know, get your brain working and your hand working at the same time. So I don't like to take a whole lot of time off, but I get the feeling that you know, after this particular project, I'm going to be fairly ready.
Understand.
And the last time I renewed my contract, I put in a leave of absence clause, which would allow me to, you know, maintain every other aspect of the contract, but just, you know, take a while to recharge batteries, and everybody was okay with that.
Good.
You know, as long as the other aspects are adhered to, which is basically not working for other comic book companies.
Right.
And I'm okay with that. You know, a break is a break. And but that being said, the sort of soft plan, which isn't set in stone yet at all, but Catherine and I have another idea for an independent graphic novel. And I think we showed some slides of work in progress.
I wanted to ask about that. Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Russian olive to Red King, we're talking about, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah. Which, you know, doesn't have a publisher. It doesn't have a page count. It's very sort of loose and fluid and organic right now. And you know, frankly, I haven't been able to do too much more than what I've had available to show the crowd at San Diego.
Gotcha.
Understood. So that's really been sitting quite far back in my mind, but it's something that we want to get to sooner rather than later. So if, you know, there's a break and there's, you know, some actual time off, then maybe I can use some of that time off from Marvel to wrap that thing up, and that's certainly something that as I said, is in the back of my mind. But I think, you know, it's not something that I can do. It's not something I can. I feel that I can do in off hours or, you know, on Sunday afternoons in the way that Moving Pictures was done. You know, Moving Pictures came out online once
right.
a week, one page every week, and that's basically how it was produced as well. So I'd be working, you know, on whatever project, probably Marvel,
right,
related, and you know, on the weekends I'd be doing Moving Pictures, and it was an interesting experiment. And I'm glad we did it that way. But when it came to collect it in book form, we kind of touched on this earlier, but, you know, I looked at all those pages together and all these pages that have been strung out over a 3-year period, and I saw, you know, a difference in the way it was being drawn at the beginning compared to the way it was being drawn at the end.
Yeah.
And I actually spent quite a lot of time going back over all the pages and trying to, you know, find a middle ground and you know, it's very simply drawn, but I think that's kind of that's not an indication of quality. It's kind of an illusion where it's actually quite challenging to draw in that very spare, you know, pared down way, especially when, you know, as it was being produced, I was doing something completely different 6 other days of the week.
Right, right.
So I did find at the end that it wasn't, it didn't hang together in the way that I really wanted it to. So when we do sit down and do Russian Olive in its entirety, I think it has to be done in one, you know, big chunk. And that'll probably be, it's right now hanging around 100, 120 pages, which
okay.
is a similar length to Moving Pictures.
Right.
But I think that can be done, you know, over the course of a couple of months, if that was the only thing I was doing. And I think that would, you know, really ensure that it would all make sense together. You know, it would all be, all knit into one cohesive thing. Well, unlike this sentence entirely. But, you know,
no,
as far as comics go, it was
not at all.
I think it really requires that I sit down and concentrate on that soul.
Okay. No, I can see that, man, and that's fair. And again, yeah, I was wondering about that, I was going to ask you about it, and clearly your work schedule suggests that you've just kind of laid out what will need to happen for you to get back to Russian Olive. So when you do, we look forward to it. Because, again, Moving Pictures is something we covered a lot in our panel at San Diego. So, again, I refer people to that episode to listen to it and hear about the book. It's a wonderful book, and I know a lot of my friends have picked it up since that episode. And, really, man, honestly, a few other podcasters really and really were, like, blown away and, you know, weren't used to seeing that style from you and just, you know, really fell more in love with Catherine's writing. So I think win-win. So it worked out.
Yes, for sure. and we were really pleased by the sort of overall reception and the numbers we've gotten back from Top Shelf concerning its first year publication. We were in Spain in November, and we worked with Dolman, the publisher in that country, to get a Spanish edition out for our appearance in Spain. And they must have worked around the clock because they basically had a month to translate and reformat and print and distribute the book before we got there, and it happened miraculously. But the edition is so gorgeous that we were really, really, really impressed by the way it looked, and actually had, you know, a couple of moments where we thought, wow, we could have done some of this with our edition, but we were really satisfied with what we accomplished with Top Shelf, and also there was an Italian edition that came out at the Lucca Festival.
Fantastic.
Earlier on in 2010, so we couldn't be happier at the reception that we've gotten.
I'm not surprised, because obviously it is a very European story, and I can see it obviously working in the various countries being translated and stuff. So that's terrific, man. That's fantastic. It's wonderful. It really is. And I think that's, you know, and again, we love the superhero stuff. That's great. It's great that you're able to flex your muscles, though, and do this other stuff, both of you. And when you have time to do the next one, we're excited about it.
This is where we came from, you know.
True, exactly.
The kind of material that we were doing in the late 80s.
The black and white era.
Publishing and, So, this is where, almost everybody that it seems that's working for Marvel now has come from. You know, you think of Brubaker and Bendis and Fraction, for example, and all these guys have come from independent work.
That's exactly right.
Doing stuff that interested them, that they were really keen on doing, and they're obviously still doing. In some cases, walking the line between superheroics and independent work, but I think, you know, it doesn't have to be exclusive. You don't have to do one or the other.
Absolutely.
And it just goes to show.
Very cool, man. Well, and another mainstream thing that came out in November that everyone, I think, was happy to see come back was Shock Rockets. And that's kind of neat.
Yes, and IDW did such a beautiful job. That's a book that, you just can't kill. we were the only ones to complete our commitment with Gorilla, and you know, that's in no small part due to Kurt's dedication to ownership and self-publishing, and also his dedication to readers and fans. We were really committed to doing what we set out to do, even though the kind of house of cards situation that Gorilla found itself in just didn't lend itself to having it happen very easily. But then, there was some media rights that were optioned and eventually sold for Shock Rockets that supported us, and actually, you know, Kurt was able to make all the finances work, and that was able to allow us to do an edition with Dark Horse, and I thought that was really great.
Yep.
And that got into a lot of venues outside the direct market, and it was really sort of designed to be a book that would appeal to, you know, the non-mainstream superhero reader.
Absolutely.
So it was great that it got some attention in a wider context, and then to have IDW come out with this really deluxe-looking edition was wonderful. So, it just keeps sort of resurfacing every 3 or 4 years, and it seems like, the people that are discovering it now missed it, in around 2000, and then they probably missed it around 2003, 2004 when the Dark Horse edition came out. So, it's all good. We're really pleased. And actually, Kurt just sent along some proofs for IDW's companion edition of Superstar, which is the book that we did alongside Shock Rockets at that time.
How long did Superstar, how many issues of that did you guys, were you able to do?
We did one double-sized issue.
Okay.
Which was, I guess it was 42 or 48 pages, I don't remember precisely, but there were other, one of the things we did at Gorilla was, were backup stories in the other books by the other creators.
Okay, so, yes.
So there were short stories. It was kind of like a flipbook situation where, you'd get 22 pages of Section Zero, which was Carl and Tom Grummett's book, and then you'd get 6 or 8 pages of George Perez's book, or ours, or what have you. And it was a good idea. I think it worked to the extent that it did, but the benefit for us right now is that we get, that many more pages that people might not have seen if they just picked up the Superstar standalone book, and they'll get it in this extra edition. And the like Shock Rockets, they're I think there's an essay by Kurt, and some sketches and background material and cover designs and other promotional material that we did for different editions, and those books also were translated and into a couple of different European languages. So there were extra things that we did for those markets that people might not have seen at all.
Oh, very cool.
That are going to be in the IDW book. Yeah,
that's terrific. Now, honestly, I did miss Superstar. So can you give me the 10-cent tour of the premise?
The main character has a power that allows him to amp up based on donations of life force, or, you know, like an energy donation from the general public. So he and his brother, who's his business partner,
okay,
work together to, you know, set up these kinds of good feelings rallies, and they actually collect these energy donations from the general public in order so that he can, you know, do his, perform his superheroic duties.
Okay.
You know, fighting villains and
the
all
life.
Right, I've got peanut gallery comments.
What did Catherine say?
In her way, she just repeated the word duty. And then snickered to herself.
Of course she did. Atta girl.
Yes, of course. She's sweet.
High-minded Catherine. Thank you. Exactly.
Anyway, yeah, I'm sure Kurt is just has his ears burning and his.
I'm kind of bummed, Kurt. I have to tell you, and it's okay, Kurt. I'm if you are listening, but he did a podcast interview with me a few years ago, and he's just decided that, you know, he just doesn't like the way he sounds on podcasts, so he's like kind of taking a pass.
Aww.
I know, and I'm like, dude,
well, that's terrible because he's well spoken.
Of course, he is.
He's got a lot to say, and I know that he did. An interview for the Comics Journal back when it was a paper publication.
Certainly.
And it was huge. I mean, they would do, pay.
Those 30-page
interviews.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, they were enormous. And I found out later that it was all done through email, and he would even, you know, type in, you know, square bracket laughter. And, you know, he did his best to actually make it appear as if that it was, you know, it was transliterated, but I was flabbergasted that it wasn't done over the phone or in person. But
yeah, you know,
I'm terribly disappointed.
Well, there you go, man. There you go. And honestly, I don't say this to you know, like, be me. You know, I'm not trying to like out him or anything like that. That in terms of him not wanting to do this. But honestly, we had a wonderful conversation. It's a very downloaded show of mine, and I thought we had a nice rapport and stuff. We talked about it in San Diego, and he was really very pleasant about it and wasn't jerky at all. And I totally respect where he's coming from. Jimmy Chung's another guy like that as well. So I understand.
Yeah.
And Stuart, well, as we know, I know you turned me down initially, but we were able to warm you up. And after Catherine and I worked you over, here we are talking. So, you know.
Yeah, it only took 2.5 years.
No, but this is good.
I came around. Yeah. I'm not saying I'm going to do it again.
No, I understand. Is it like the dentist? Are you okay? I mean, you know, have I cleaned your teeth? You know, I mean, you know, is it terrible? We've had a nice, lovely conversation.
It's fine. And you know, Catherine was saying to me earlier today, you know, I was saying, oh, you know, I'm going to put in a whole day's work, and then I got to just want to relax, but I've got to be, you know, on and present. And she says, you know, talking to John is just, you know, the easiest thing in the world, and it'll just flow out naturally. And
see?
She's absolutely right.
Oh, my heart melts every time. And that's honestly, that's very kind.
Yeah,
I
get duty. for you, it's all hearts and flowers.
Exactly. I'm sorry, man. Exactly. You get the Beavis and Butthead, exactly, of duty. Well, these things happen. That's all right. No, man, and you know, honestly, now we've talked a good long time now, so I will wrap up. But seriously,
okay.
Thank you so much. Honestly, it's been a wonderful conversation.
Oh, thank you.
And
we'll do it again. We'll catch up again when the series is over, and you know, feeling rested and relaxed, and we'll see how it all turns out.
I will find you poolside, and you will be relaxing and enjoying some sort of cocktail and just
I hope so.
And resting on your laurels at that point. No, I have
right now. You know, we've had too much winter, and
oh god, yeah.
That's All I want to think about.
I know. We're like, it's totally frozen tundra to frozen tundra communication right now.
It's all warm thoughts right now.
There you go, my man. Well, good. No, continued success and truly looking forward to Fear Itself. The preview art's been great. And I have full faith in you and Matt. So we're looking forward to being entertained this spring.
Okay. Thanks, John.
So that was great. Stuart Emmonman. I'm so glad that we finally had the opportunity to have a long conversation. And again, if you didn't hear our first talk, go back and listen in July, or it might have been in August when I posted it. But it was from last year's San Diego Comic-Con. Catherine and Stuart were really kind and asked me to moderate their panel, and it was a fantastic thrill to be able to talk to them for the hour. And sounds like we might have another opportunity for a talk in the future, not only with Stuart, but Catherine as well. We'll give you details as that gets closer. But right now, I want to switch gears and give us a chance to listen to a new Google Voice message from But now, before we go, it's time to check on the Word Balloon Hotline, and happy to do that right now. Don't forget, if you have any questions or comments you'd like to express to me here at Word Balloon, you can call me at 312-841-7025. 312-841-7025, like this gentleman did.
Hey, my name is Rick, and I am just calling to say that I really love the podcast, and I thank you for bringing it. I am an independent musician, and I do a lot of traveling, and I listen to you as I go down the road, and just thank you so much for the great interviews. I love everything you do, so keep it up, brother, and talk to you later.
Thank you, Rich. Very nice, and you're not the first musician that told me that. Very cool that people whose jobs take them on the road for long periods of time always are very nice with emails telling me that they like Word Balloon and it helps them pass the time as they're going their long miles from station to station. So I'm very happy to be there along for the ride. Good entertainment on your travels. Next caller.
John Sutters. What's up, man? It's Jeremy. So I'm going to try and get on your message board. I am on the Jinx World deal, and haven't gone on the Jinx World site in a while, as far as the message board goes, and never posted on your board. And, you know, I'm going to go by the name. I haven't put it in there yet, but I'm going to go by the name of Shorty Big Nuts, because I'm 5'6", you know, that's the deal. And I'll post as that, but I'm watching my Blu-ray Watchmen right now, Super Edition, Special Edition. It's not even on the shelves anymore. It's ridiculous to me. You know, the Ultimate Cut, complete story, and I'm listening to the commentary, and I'm going back and forth between the commentaries of Zack Snyder and Dave Gibbons, which you did a really cool interview with it. And he said he'd come back, and he never called. You know, he never got back with him. It's too bad. Love to see you do, or hear you do another interview with Dave Gibbons now, you know, post-Watchmen film, and, you know, it's been a year now, a year and a half, whatever it's been, and you know, what a great film, regardless. I don't care what anybody says, you know, love Brian Bendis, but give me a great day. That was a great movie. You want to talk about decompression, you know, he was talking about doing an interview with Brian, you know, you had him, he was going to do a decompression of, the Daredevil movie. He's like, I would decompress that thing so it's not going to, you know, he would see the costume for 6 hours, you know, or whatever. So, whatever, man. I don't know what he wanted, but what a great film, complete film, especially the one with the, you know, with the animation cut into the film. Good stuff. Recommend a DVD. Cheers.
Thanks for the call, Jeremy. Dave Gibbons, would love to have him back, and I've actually been thinking along the same lines that it has been over a year since our first talk. I did see him in San Diego, and we had a really nice conversation, brief, but it was very good to see Dave. And I have every intention of having Dave back, and you're right. Now that the Watchmen phenomenon has cooled down post-film, it would be good to talk to him and see how things are going. Plus, I know he has some neat projects coming up as well. So I will do what I can in the months ahead to get Dave back, because we barely scratched the surface of his career. Would love to talk more with him. Really one of the greats in the business, and a real honor to have talked to him in the past. Hope to talk to him again. As for my decompressed conversations with Bendis, all I can tell you is, man, we've got a new Bendis tapes that is coming hopefully soon.
We've just had trouble kind of coordinating our schedules, but there's a stack of questions waiting for us at Jinx World, and you know, we will make the time to answer those as soon as we can. Brian is really busy. I'm sure you guys know that he's got both Alter Ego and Powers in heavy development right now, beyond his usual comic book work as well. Plus, he's working on the Ultimate Spider-Man animated series with Paul Dini and the Men of Action and Jeff Loeb. So lots is going on with Brendis, and you know, I'm patient, and Brian is busy. We'll see him at C2E2. Hopefully before C2E2, we will fire up a new Bendis tape, so hopefully this month, and get a new update of what's going on all of his projects, and looking forward to what's coming up with the Avengers, Ultimate Spider-Man, and the like. So there you go. Again, if you want to jump in on the Word Balloon hotline, feel free to call 312-841-7025, 312-841-7025. And that'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks again for listening. Don't forget, Word Balloon is brought to you by C2E2, the Chicago Comics and Entertainment Expo. Volume 2 is this year. It's happening March 18th through the 20th at McCormick Place in downtown Chicago. We've told you the lineup. Man, great creators coming. Brian Bendis, Matt Fraction, Garth Ennis, Doug Monkey is coming. Tons more. Go to C2E2.com for more information. And don't forget, if you register for tickets before March 14th, you can go for the entire weekend for just $50. It's a great value. More names are coming. They're going to be posting them as the weeks get closer to C2E2. But already, it's a very impressive lineup. Check it out for yourself. C2E2.com. You won't believe the lineup, and you'll have a great time, I promise. And also come by and say hello to me, because I'll be there at Podcast Alley, combing the aisles as well, getting interviews for Word Balloon, and also doing a couple Word Balloon shows right there in Podcast Alley. So you can bear witness and join in on the conversation live when we talk to some of these people. As we get closer, we'll tell you who will be joining us at the table at Podcast Alley for some great interviews. And, you know, yeah, we'll line up people and they can ask questions live on Word Balloon. How about that? All happening at C2E2 this year, March 18th through the 20th at McCormick Place in downtown Chicago. For more information, C2E2.com. Word Balloon is also brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. It's a great place to go for books, especially if you're looking for Stuart Immonen product. I'm going to keep rattling off more books from Stuart. Stuart and Catherine did Never As Bad As You Think from Boom. It's a great original graphic novel tracking the alarming failures of paranoid urbanites, murderous waitstaff, heartbroken ambulance drivers, mariachi bands, talking cats and dogs, and people who like cake. The standard retail price is $15.99 at InStockTrades.com. It's just $11.99. Stuart was part of the Superman team, as we talked about. One of those great books that came from the Superman team. They Saved Luther's Brain. That's one of my favorites. John Byrne, Roger Stern, Dick Giordano, Butch Geis. Unbelievable stuff. The standard retail price is $14.95 at InStockTrades.com. It's just $9.27. There's Ultimate Fantastic Four, Volume 2, written by Warren Ellis, drawn by Stuart Immonen. The standard retail price is $12.99 at InStockTrades.com. It's $8.05. Don't forget about their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com, for all your pre-order needs. Find the deals. They are waiting for you at InStockTrades.com. John Sutris saying thanks again for listening to Word Balloon. If you want to reach me, do it via email, john@wordballoon.com. You can follow me on Twitter under John Word Balloon, under Facebook under my name, John Sutris. Or, of course, there's the Word Balloon hotline, 312-841-7025. Until next time, thanks again for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2011.